You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Wednesday, December 29th, 2010, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Rebecca Watson.
Hello, everyone.
Jay Novella.
What's up, guys?
Evan Bernstein.
Happy New Year.
And our special guest, Mike LaSalle.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Mike!
I remember Mike.
Yeah, this is now a tradition. Mike joins us for the year-end wrap-up episode every year.
And get paid handsomely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Before we get started, Evan, tell us about this day.
All right, but I'll need some help introducing this from, well, you'll hear.
Have you ever heard of a thing called fluoridation? Fluoridation of water?
Yes, I have heard of that, Jack, yes.
Well, do you know what it is?
No.
Do you realize that fluoridation is the most monstrously conceived and dangerous communist plot we have ever had to face?
All right.
What the hell?
Is that Sergeant Jack Ripper? Is that
what that was? Colonel Ripper.
Colonel Jack Ripper.
Colonel Jack Ripper. On January 1st, 1967, the first fluoridation law in the United States went into effect here in Connecticut, requiring fluoridation of public water supplies serving 20,000 people or more.
Yeah.
The water fluoridation era began in 1945 when the cities of Newburgh, New York, New York City, Grand Rapids, Michigan began adding sodium fluoride to the public water system.
And it didn't take long for the cranks to get in there and start complaining about
their precious bodily fluids.
Yeah, our precious bodily fluids.
They still complain about it today.
Oh, yeah.
Bastards.
Yes, there is such a thing as too much fluoridation and too much fluoride for the body, but it's been shown to be very effective when controlled, you know, certain doses.
Yeah, the current doses in public water systems, it's actually quite effective in reducing tooth decay, and it's perfectly safe.
You don't even have to brush your teeth anymore.
Well, nope. I wouldn't go that far, but...
No, it's true. No brushing, no flossing. It's fine.
I wonder what Kubrick would have done, though, if he didn't have the fluoridation hysteria of the time to kind of pull
Wi-Fi,
off.
Maybe? What yeah. Interfering with my precious bodily cells.
What? So this is our year-end wrap-up episode, 2010 year in review, and quite a year it has been.
Is it the end of the year already?
Is that
like
amazing?
Didn't this year just start?
It just goes by faster all the time.
Yeah. This is what it's like to be old.
Yeah.
Oh, God. It
keeps going by faster and faster.
No, really.
Your perception of time,
someone
it does.
Someone was asking
up.
Me like how long I've been on the podcast, and it's something like 4 years or something?
Mm-hmm. It's getting close to five.
But
that's insane. It's completely insane.
You thought it was like 3 months or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, oh, this will be
nice. Yeah. You can't believe I haven't dropped you losers yet.
This will die out fast. Yeah.
You old biddy. Rebecca, did you ever have a moment, say, within the first 3 or 4 months where you were like, what am I doing with these idiots?
Yeah. No, I still have this moment. Every fucking show, Jay.
That was too easy, Jay. Too easy.
What am I doing?
Yet you still...
Rebecca
back.
Started on episode 35, which means this is her 250th episode.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, this is episode 285. Yeah.
You know what? We should have Mike in the background of all of our shows, not saying anything except for occasionally popping up with little tidbits. Like,
yeah.
Like pop-up video.
Yeah, pop-up remember that?
Video.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, that was great.
Which I can only say because
that.
I'm an old, you know, like all the kids are
Mike could play like a little ding
like
noise
Microsoft
and just shoot out the fact.
Right.
Pop-up skeptic.
Pop-up Mike LaSalle.
Yeah.
Pop-up Mike LaSalle.
Well, we're going to start with the best and worst of 2010. We did poll our listeners, and we will be throwing in our own opinions as well. Starting with everyone's favorite episode. So what was your favorite episode this year? What do you think, guys?
This one
we're doing right now?
It's 2011.
No, Australia was my favorite episode. And it wasn't for anything we necessarily said on the episode. It was just for the fact that we were all together in Australia.
Yeah.
Well,
it's hard to argue with that. I have to agree with that.
For us, the live shows are a lot of fun. Because we're all together, you know. Although The Vancouver show was awesome. The only problem with the Vancouver show is that Rebecca wasn't there.
Rebecca wasn't there.
It was the Canada thing, too. You know, a lot of bald people there.
Yeah.
But it was the Vancouver show because George Trav was with us, and he's just awesome.
Right. Yeah. George did a couple of ridiculously funny things during that show, and I thought that we all were having a really good time. I was trying to figure out why that show ended up being my favorite show of the year as well, and I think part of it was that we were ridiculously amped to go to Australia, and we were really jet lagged, so we were all like our guard was completely down. Like that was very uncensored.
See, that's how it is for me to do every episode.
Oh, that's the key.
Yeah, really jet lagged.
You have to inhibit your frontal lobe some way.
You know, something that the listeners don't know about is that right before we went on stage, we were all standing out there in the cold, like waiting for them to just tell us, okay, guys, it's time to come. So we all got into a really heated conversation about something. I don't remember what the hell we were talking about. We were all like laughing and we were just like totally involved.
We were silly out there.
Yeah, because we were all sleep deprived. And then we hear Evan Bernstein. And then, like, 5 seconds goes by. Evan Bernstein! You know, like, we're like, oh, we've got to get out like, there.
It's like, I'm here. Why? Who's called? Oh, I got to go.
On stage.
Professionals. True professionals.
It's hard to hear through a steel door outside in the Vancouver cold. It's not exactly easy.
There were a couple of votes from our listeners for episode 259. Not sure why. That was the June 28th episode. No interview. Just we talked about whooping cough epidemic and a whaling film.
Sounds like a blast.
Call to ban homeopathy. Yeah, but whatever.
Whaling call?
Sunscreen. That was the sunscreen episode. Yeah.
You know, that's the problem, though, is that, you know, I was looking over our past episodes in order to get a feel for what was the funniest episode, you know, which one was the most fun. And it's really difficult to tell because you never know what is going to result. Like, it's not what's in the notes page. It's not the main points of the episode. It's just whatever gets us off on a tangent.
Yeah, that it's the unexpected banter that makes the episode really good.
Well, I think that's, again, that's because we're really riffing and we're just being, you know, kind of dorks ourselves and not kind of thinking about the stuff that we were reading about and researching all week.
You were researching all week.
Yeah, right.
All week.
So Jay, what we need, we have to add a banter index to the show notes page so we can better
assess.
Well,
this is what Mike used to do.
Yeah.
Mike
used to have a fan page.
Mike, get back on that. The fan page was awesome. Yeah, because you had like funny quotes from every episode and things like that. We need someone who's listening now, who listens to every show obsessively. You need to get in touch with us so we can hook you up with Mike so you can get the fan page running again.
Yeah, because we have Mike busy doing other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so, I guess Mike really stopped doing that stuff, guys, because we just asked him to do a lot of other more important stuff for us. And it was like, all right, do I do this or do I do the stuff they really need done? So,
plus, I'm not really a fan anymore.
No, you're not a fan.
You've
been on the show too many times.
You've transcended that status.
No, he just doesn't like the show anymore.
Okay.
No, I think Mike said, and I quote,
I see,
Evan's an asshole.
Is that what he said? My Skype
that
cut
does
out
sound
at the
exactly
time,
like
and I
Mike.
Thought, I heard the Evan is part, and I'm like, oh, he must have said good guy.
Mm-hmm. All right, best interview.
So my favorite two interviews of the year were Aubrey de Grey and Sonal. Sonal, if you remember, is the Indian skeptic who debunked the killy, killy, killy guy that said he was going to kill him by basically concentrating on him. And Sonal went through this awesome description of his story and what happened. And, oh, God, it also happens to be one of the funniest things that I remember of the year was when Sonal said the guy was trying to strike him down. And he just said it so, he was terrified, you know what I mean? And he was, like, expressing how terrified he was, but it was so funny. Yeah.
I have to say that was one of my favorite interviews as well, despite the fact that that was overwhelmingly the most difficult interview for me to edit.
But it was a great interview.
But it was a great interview. Yeah.
That's all behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Plus, that was really one of the – it's got to be one of the top 5 or 10 skeptical moments in history. I mean, think of the audience this guy had.
Yeah.
Hundreds of millions of people watching him pretty much totally own this guy. So that, to me, that was a huge, huge moment in skepticism.
Well, it was an impromptu conflict that they had on TV. They didn't really know that things were going to go that way. And then what happened was it was so well received. So many people tuned in and were totally glued to their TV sets for hours past when the program was supposed to end. And
tens or hundreds of millions of people.
Oh, yeah. It was the numbers were phenomenal. And then what happened was they planned the next day. They had another special TV show where the guy was going to try to kill him again by using tantric meditation on him and whatnot. So what an event. And I'm telling you, this guy became a superstar after that in India.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We got some listener votes for Daniel Wilson, who the guy who discussed robots, they said. That was a good interview. The robot guy.
That was good.
Oh, he was awesome. Yeah, we really clicked with him. He was really fun to talk to.
I mean, what the hell? How to raise your robot army? What's not to love?
Right.
A few people on Twitter have nominated Reese Morgan as one of the best interviews, Reese being the young British lad who debunked the crazy
bleach,
the drinking bleach cure. Ugh. Who and Reese ended up, of course, winning the Skeptic of the Year at TAM London. He was just an awesome kid.
Well deserved. Of course, all the interviews were awesome. I mean, we had a really good year for interviews. A lot of the regular skeptics that we had on our show, but also some new names, new voices. So they were all good. But I agree that for some reason, I don't know if you asked Jay, Sunal was my favorite.
You know, a funny memory from interviewing Aubrey de Grey. Do you guys remember when I was so excited to talk to Aubrey de Grey?
Oh, there's still stains all over the place.
I was just like, it's just so rare that I get that amped over meeting someone who, you know, I kind of been following and reading about for years and years. I think, you know, if I met like Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'd get maybe equally as excited just because of the position that Aubrey has in my life intellectually and what his life pursuit is and everything. So anyway, so we're doing the interview, and he said to Steve at one point, "Oh, that's a good question, you know." And then Bob asked a question, and he complimented Bob on his question. And then I asked him a question.
Well, yeah. Jay's typing to us in the Skype chat. It's like, oh God, Aubrey de Grey just praised you two guys. I got to ask him a really good question now. I got to get him to praise my question. So Jay comes out with his question, and Aubrey de Grey goes, "I don't understand what you're asking."
Oh, God.
Oh man.
And you guys literally could hear me just deflate. I was like, really? And then I had to restate my question like three times.
Oh, boy. That's...
Jay cried for 2 weeks after that.
I was so pissed.
That was almost as bad as when you couldn't bend the frying pan.
That's true. Bob, and I'm sure that you've uploaded video of that to YouTube.
No, I haven't.
I believe the boys are talking about bending a frying pan. A listener had volunteered to show them how to do that in Australia.
No, it was Jason. It was Jason.
Yeah, Jason was working. Yeah, he's a great guy.
I ripped a phone book in half.
He taught us how to rip the phone book in half and bend frying pans. So he was a lot of fun.
You all looked very manly.
Another interview that got to mention was the Randy Banachek interview.
Yeah.
And we decided this year at TAM 8 to do interviews with multiple people at once because we don't really get an opportunity to do that on Skype. It's not really practical. But in person, we can do that. We could do the combo interviews. I think that worked really well. I mean,
it did. It really
did. The listeners should tell us what they think. But I think those combo interviews are work, and we plan on doing that next year at TAM as well.
Next year, it's going to be Jenny McCarthy and Amanda Peet. One interview.
I can interview them in my room.
Mike, you're not here to bring down the tone.
That's Rebecca's job.
I'm sorry.
Don't step on my toes.
All right, funniest moment. This is tough. Who could remember?
Yeah.
But I know what the funniest moment is.
All right, go on.
And correct me if I'm wrong, if this wasn't this year, but wasn't this the year that we remembered how creepy Bob sounded in episode one?
Yes. Hello. This is the hello.
Hello.
It was the 5-year anniversary episode.
Hello.
I mean, I got more...
Well, that had legs, didn't it?
More people in person came up to me, and their first thing they said to me was, "Hello." You know, like that. And it was instantaneous, like, yep, I know, right? How screwed up is that?
That was, Bob, I'm sorry, that was our best bit this year. year. Was making fun of you hello.
It, you know, it, you know, whatever. It had legs. That had legs. So yeah, whatever. That's fine. It was anything. You know, it was funny. So what the hell? I still don't believe that. That's really me. I think you tweak that in post production, Steve, because I have no memory of sounding so stupid. Then again,
that's
I usually don't
your brain
have a memory.
Blocked it out.
Yeah,
Bob,
must have.
The thing that I love is whenever I think about that, I could just picture you sitting there at your desk, like trying, like, cause Bob. Let's face it, you were trying to sound cool.
No. Jay, there's nothing cool. There's nothing cool about what came out of my mouth that night.
I didn't say that you achieved what you were trying to achieve. No. I said you were trying. You were sitting there thinking, I have to, like, you know, I have to sound relaxed and kind of hip right now. And you came out with
I don't think I was trying that. I don't know what was going through my mind, but I can't imagine that that's what was going through my mind.
All right. You're trying to be engaging or different or something.
I don't know what the hell it was. It was a fail on.
It was gold, Bob. It was a brain
fart.
It was gold.
It was
whatever.
It
I mean, there's
smooth.
Plenty of other funny shit.
Like every time you say crap during science or fiction.
Or every time Jay expresses disbelief during science or fiction.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Can we play that?
Yeah.
Can we do that now? Because I mentioned this a while back on one of the shows that Jay always seems to express disbelief in a humorous manner, and that it would be funny if you were to string all of those together. And one brave listener actually took it upon himself to go through and do that. And I think it's hysterical. Let's play it. Jay Novello expresses disbelief.
Say it isn't so. That just seems like total BS to me. Whoa! Craziness. This is totally bullshit. Kind of BS. My God. How can that possibly be true? Everybody would have brain cancer.
What?
What? What? How? I don't know. I'm just saying, listen.
There was a mystery?
I'll tell you what. I agree with Bob. Well, what do you mean? I'm commenting in my head. That's awesome. My head is kind of getting weird looking as I get older.
I'll take science or fiction for 1,000.
Wow, you suck. That's really weird. I mean,
oh, that's bullshit, Steve, really?
Ah, it can't be. That doesn't make sense. Well, how the hell am I supposed to know if 8% of Americans said that? Wow, this is a really... Damn, Steve. I'm stumped. Wow, just like that, huh?
I don't agree with it.
Huh? Shit, man, I might lose right out of the gate here. That's incredible. Son of a bitch.
Give me the answer. That would help.
Ah,
I see. Mm.
Huh. Oh, my God, Steve.
What's that?
This is a really hard one. I can't... Yeah! My God. Wow! How can that possibly be true? Really?
I could honestly listen to that all day.
Oh,
I could listen to that all day long.
The funny thing is, Jay was saying all of that about the true items.
You know what is so weird is that when I heard that a listener named Jason Ferber sends us these sound files, these mashups that he made. And when I heard that one, I actually said, oh, I don't believe it. I actually said that out loud.
So you're saying you can't control yourself?
No. I love it. I don't know why. I love the disbelief.
You have skeptoria.
There's something you could take for that.
You're like the journalist, Jay, that says every scientist is baffled, stumped, bamboozled.
Jay's who they're talking about when they say, skeptics are baffled. Just Jay.
All right, best Who's That Noisy?
I can tell you worse Who's That Noisy.
Oh, with the dying beaver.
Dying beaver. Dying beaver.
That was my favorite.
Do I need to clarify this again? It wasn't a dying beaver. It was a beaver showing remorse for the loss of its family.
Yeah, his entire
they
family.
Beaver. That was
like
horrible.
The remorseful beaver.
Yeah. God. I'm still depressed.
Well, this is what happens when you have the listeners send in the Who's That Noisy.
Yeah, blame the listeners.
I give you funny cartoon voices, and they give you dying beavers.
Beavers
in mourning.
I like the hyenas. They were pretty cool.
You know, the listeners did have some suggestions of their own, and I think this one in particular garnished the most votes.
Garnered, I think.
Yeah, unless they were putting little olives on the side.
All right, and take two, and action. So our listeners also gave us their God of Christ. Garnish.
Evan, you think I'm editing that out, don't you?
Yeah, I do think I'm editing that out.
That's all right. You can continue in your
delivery. You better, yeah.
Steve.
The listeners spoke, and they decided that, their favorite Who's That Noisy from the year was this little number.
Lasers.
Yeah, the centipede game. Ice breaking.
The beginning of some 1980s dance hit classic.
If it wasn't, it should have been, Rebecca. That's very good. The sound of ice cracking.
If only someone could auto-tune Jay's expressions of disbelief and said it.
Oh, that's it.
That is a background.
You know that's happening now.
Ice breaking, yeah.
Well, I have a favorite Who's That Noisy.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Of what I could remember. I actually really, really liked the whole Laughing Hyena thing.
I thought that.
Yeah. You said that already, Steve?
Yeah, thanks for bringing it up again, though. Yeah.
Good job, Jay.
No, it's good. Redundancy is good.
Well, what about the best quote of the year, Jay?
Best quote. Yeah, I read every quote from this year, and
you mean when you did it the first time?
Again. And again. I actually liked the quote from episode 235, and if I'm remembering correctly, that was the very first episode of 2010. And that quote is, "Weary the path that does not challenge. Doubt is an incentive to truth, and patient inquiry leadeth the way." And if you guys remember, Richard Saunders read the name of the writer of that quote, and he said, "Jose Bilal." Remember that?
Yeah, yeah. My favorite, Jay, I went through all of them as well. My favorite was from Randall Monroe. Very, very pithy, but very, very, very.
What was his name?
Randall Monroe.
Come again?
The quote
Randall
is
Monroe.
The quote is, "You don't use science to show you're right. You use science to become right." Mm-hmm. I really like that one.
Very pithy.
Very good.
I like that.
You know, I like it anytime American history and skepticism come neatly together, and there was no better example of that than this quote. "It is error only and not truth that shrinks from inquiry." Thomas Paine, episode 239.
Very nice.
I got one more, Jay. This is another good one, Jay, from Bertrand Russell. "Truth is a shining goddess, always veiled, always distant, never wholly approachable, but worthy of all the devotion of which the human spirit is capable."
Oh, God, that's awesome. Yeah, that's an awesome quote.
Whew.
All right, let's move on to some serious stuff. The best science news story of the year.
Ooh.
That was hard.
It was a lot. Yeah. A lot of candidates.
Best in what way, Steve?
Whatever you want to use, whatever criteria you choose.
No. The synthetic life story seemed to be the one that most of the experts deemed the biggest science story of the year.
That was big. Again, it wasn't really creating artificial life. They essentially figured out how to manufacture DNA and then of a bacteria, but based upon other bacteria DNA, and put that into a bacterium.
Right, synthetic
biology. Which then used that program to reproduce. So you created a new line of bacteria from that. A very, very important, groundbreaking step in the whole artificial life thing. So yeah, that was definitely a milestone. That certainly gets on my short list.
Yeah, for me, that was definitely in my top three. And it really was a proof of concept. It really, in and of itself, it wasn't incredibly dramatic. But I think it points the way, where the next generation is going to take us in synthetic biology. And it's going to be, I think it's greatly underappreciated where this specific industry is going to lead us. I mean, initially, we're going to tweak bacteria to make them, even better tools for mankind. We could have them excrete biofuel, we could have them eat hazardous waste. One of these first steps could be pretty dramatic. But then even after that, we'll be using this technology to create, pretty much completely novel bacteria-like organisms that are from the ground up, completely from scratch, from the ground up, with abilities and behaviors that we've never seen in nature. And we might, it might take a billion years to evolve by itself. And then there's other steps after that that would be even more dramatic. I mean, imagine fully synthetic, multicellular prokaryotic organisms. I mean, imagine where you can go with that. So it's just really people are going to remember this year for a lot of these advances.
One of the things that some of our listeners mentioned that I agree with for Science News Story of the Year was the whole ClimateGate being a made-up news story. That was such an important science news story, and it was one that just wasn't being reported anywhere, and it was quite frustrating. So I thought it was good that we got it out there and managed to talk about it a bit. And it really was huge. This supposed controversy that had been completely manufactured out of whole cloth.
That got the most votes, I think, that story, yeah.
One of the news items that really made me think a lot was the Voyager 1 leaving the solar system.
You liked that one, huh?
I really did like that one. I mean, after doing some research on it and then talking to you on the show about it, Bob, and then afterwards I actually got so interested in it. I did a lot more reading on it. Yeah, I did. I just got really, really excited about that idea and how profound it is. And you know, I wanted to see images of artist conceptions of what's going on, where it is, and I never really thought about the sphere around our solar system and where the sun's influence stops, and how far away that actually is from all the planets. And I kind of had that moment where I almost felt like I could feel the distance, like, oh my God, you know how far away that thing is and how, you know, void it's going to be when it leaves the solar system.
Yeah. And just to be a little anal, it's not strictly a spherical shape, but that's okay.
Yeah, you're right. It's like weird bubbles inside of bubbles kind of, but they're not all spherical and they're not all round.
I think there's something intrinsic to it. I think it is interesting and it is important to kind of know where these certain boundaries are. I think there's something kind of inside of us that has a wanting to know that kind of information.
But what's weird about it too, Evan, is that humans didn't evolve to deal with thoughts like this. And that might sound weird to some of you, but big numbers are not a part of the normal person's thinking. We can't really perceive them, and thinking of distances that far, I mean, we're only supposed to think of distance in miles, at the most, or kilometers, thousands of miles. We're not built that way. Our brains are not tuned to function to understand and digest stuff like that. So thinking about how far away a human object is from Earth and how tiny it is and how fast it's moving, I just find that so, so provocative.
Ken, and as far away as it is, what was it, 10 billion miles or kilometers? It's barely, across the street, if you think about it. It's barely moved in terms of the size of just our galaxy alone, which is a tiny speck on another speck.
Yeah, we're pretty small.
I can't help but add a human thought to being Voyager, I know it's stupid, but there's something really almost lonely about it being out there.
When those Mars rovers, when the Mars rover shut down, that was so sad. That was probably last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you're right, Rebecca.
Yeah,
did you get that little throb like in your heart, like, oh, the little guy shut down?
Wally.
I tend to anthropomorphize objects more than others, though, anyway. So.
Well, at least one of you guys can relate. I know the rest of you are like, oh, my God.
It's a very thin umbilical cord, but it is little umbilical cords out there in the solar system that come back to us. They are important.
I think the biggest news story of the year, which we touched upon earlier in the year, and there was a follow-up, I don't think we actually covered it, is the discovery of a new human species.
Yeah, that was cool.
The finger bone in the cave in Siberia, which they did a DNA analysis on and said, well, it's not a Homo neanderthalensis, it's not a Homo sapiens, it's something else. It's a subspecies of Neanderthals.
Right.
But it's distinct, a distinct population worthy of its own designation, which is, I guess it's going to be Homo Denisovans, right? Denisovan.
Yeah, why didn't that get more play?
That's always huge to me. And, with the family, the human family is expanded by one. That's massive.
That is massive.
Why didn't
it's like
we
your
see
cousin
more
just
about
had
that?
A baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's probably going to be more of these little subpopulations discovered over time.
Cool.
The other news story, this again may sound weird, but there are just some things that just sort of blow my conception of things. And one was the fact that the coming bed bug infestasia that's coming,
The coming?
The notion that we have been living in this bubble of time without bed bugs being endemic, and that we're coming back to a time when bed bugs are just going to be part of life.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah. Do you think that...
I just thought in the big cities and stuff that we're in the country and we're safe.
Well, I hope so, but it sounds like, you know, we don't
That's
know what
they
the...
think about the zombies, and, you yeah. know, it doesn't yeah. work that way.
Get me out of the,
it doesn't work that
way.
Get
me out of the country. I need the safety
They'll
of the
find
city.
You. They will find you, Evan.
Because you think you have this concept that bed bugs are a thing of sort of the pre-industrial past. And again, we have this linear concept of progress, that once we lick a problem, it stays licked. You know, we got rid of bed bugs. We don't have to deal with that in an industrialized nation. But that may not be true. We may be once again become a fact of life.
Now, why did they go away?
I don't want it
because
to be a fact of life.
DDT, basically.
DDT basically almost wiped them out. Yeah, but look how long it took for them to come back, Steve. I mean, why can't we just use DDT for a little while and rock it out again and then, you know,
well,
not
we could.
Use
it. It would just have to be heavily dependent on, you know, what bird species are in the area and whether or not you could do that without causing another species to go extinct.
I don't want to rehash the... We had a long conversation with Bug Girl about the relationship between DDT and other pesticides and bed bugs. So I don't want to rehash that. But yeah, just the notion that they're coming back was disturbing.
Yeah, you don't want to angry up that swarm again.
It's no big deal. Just put a whole bunch of little nano bugs in your bed to kill them.
This is your best science
will be
story of the year,
infested
Steve.
With mutated nanobots.
Cool.
Yeah, but they'll be programmed to like go away after a while, right?
All right, the most outrageous illogical statement or pseudoscientific claim.
Well,
I got this one.
I got one too.
Okay. What is it?
I'm not going to go with funny though. I'm going to go with serious.
Thanks for the warning.
Sorry. The bomb detectors, the bomb dowsers.
Yeah. Oh God,
yeah, I looked at those
that
too.
That was bad.
The very beginning of the year, we were talking about this.
So those were what the ones where they actually print a picture of the thing they want to detect and they put it in the device.
Pretty much, and then the only actual thing inside the cards that define which object you're looking for are those security tags that you put on clothes at Target to make sure people don't steal them. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely nothing inside. And they were selling for tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars to military personnel who are using them to
$85
try to
million
find
dollars
bombs.
Worth of orders I saw these people.
Yeah.
Get. $85 million bucks.
But, like, through the dedicated efforts of many skeptical folks, they were taken out of business.
Yep.
Although, unfortunately, I don't think the guy ever saw prison time.
Was it McCormick? He was having a trial this year. I don't know how that turned out.
Yeah, that's something where people get killed. I mean, you have to be depraved.
I'm
going to do
a
scam that's going to result in people getting blown up.
Yeah, you couldn't cook up something more ridiculously deadly than that.
Yeah.
Well, on a lighter note, I choose the article about the 70-year-old guy that claimed that he was in his 80s and he claimed he hadn't eaten anything or had any liquids for 70 years.
Yeah. That got the most votes.
Yeah.
That was Prahlad Johnny.
Oh, Prahlad.
Yeah, Prahlad.
The guy was like brushing his teeth and they were kind of loose about him gargling, you know, quote unquote gargling. Yeah. And then you know, they let him go outside so he can get some sunshine when he was off camera.
And where was he going?
Yeah.
Burger King.
But nothing beats Randy's story of when he was testing another person that had a similar belief.
Yep.
And Randy waited out in the parking lot and the guy left, went to Burger King, came back with a bag of hamburgers that night because the guy was staying at a hotel where they had him like kind of under lock and key, but he got out. And then Randy goes up and is like, what are you doing with the hamburgers? And the guy's like, I was just going to smell them.
Just smelling them. Absorbing their essence.
Can you imagine, Randy, what are you doing with the hamburgers? What are you doing?
Put down the hamburgers and step away.
Snagged.
Take a deep breath.
Some people on the forum mentioned that lady on YouTube, that eventually got to YouTube, the video of the woman babbling about homeopathy and how I think she was the one who was saying that E equals MC squared and there's really hardly any mass in the universe.
Yeah.
So we could just ignore that.
She was a homeopath, huh?
Yeah. She was describing why homeopathy.
Oh, works. Is that why?
And it was just such a bundle of insanity.
Yeah, somebody wrote, yeah, that bimbo tried to explain homeopathy on YouTube.
I feel like that's bimbo is a sexist term that I should not like, but it's just such, it's got such a wonderful old school charm to it.
But and I don't, she was talking to the people there like they were 4-year-olds. Like the way that she was explaining it. And then it occurred to me, maybe she's the one that's on the 4-year-old level, you know?
Right.
Oh, I know 4-year-olds who have more common sense and ability to use rationality. She's an idiot. She's just an idiot.
Do you guys remember when Pat Boone earlier this year hijacked the laws of physics as evidence to support the existence of God?
Yes.
I love that Pat Boone is in the news.
Right. Yeah.
Let's ask Pat Boone what he has to say about this.
Is he still alive?
Well, apparently. Yeah, it does.
Using I think we should make that a regular segment. Whenever we talk about a science news story, it should be, what does Pat Boone have to say about this? And then we'll have Pat Boone call in.
No, even better. What does Bimbo Girl have to say about this?
Bimbo Girl. That'd be funny segment, Bob.
Dumb and Dumber.
All right, coming up to my favorite, Jackass of the Year.
Jackass.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Besides all the people we just mentioned.
Right.
You know, for this segment, I don't think, for just pure jackassitude, every year, you've got to have Oprah at least in the top three.
She's always an honorable mention.
I think always.
We should call it the Oprah Award.
She has a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She gets the Lifetime Achievement Award. We never have to vote her again. She just gets it for life.
Yeah.
She is the jackass for life.
Bitch,
she
even followed us to Australia. Get your own
country. One thing about Oprah, though, is Oprah definitely is not... I don't think that Oprah is stupid. I don't think that she is lacking intelligence.
No. You don't have to be stupid to believe a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, she's very intelligent.
You're just not a critical thinker at all.
When I think jackass, I think a combination of being ignorant and having some deficiencies in the smarts department.
And morality.
Yes, let's add that in.
Somebody who's dumb, immoral, who's doing evil or bad in the name of ignorance and pseudoscience. I mean, that's what I think of.
Yeah, I could ascribe to that.
So who do you got, Steve?
Well, there were a lot of votes for the British Chiropractic Association.
Yep. Yeah.
I heartily endorse that. I think collectively that homeopathy gets my vote.
Didn't we? I don't remember last year, but wouldn't we have nominated the BCA for this last year?
But their jackassitude dribbled over into 2010.
Yeah, it did.
It is Steve. So, but you're not going to pick someone.
Well, hang on. So, I think that homeopathy had a really bad year. They got hammered on multiple fronts.
Slammered.
And yet, the defenders of homeopathy continue to promote this abject nonsense.
Yeah.
So I just think all homeopaths around the world get my vote collectively.
Isn't that the definition of insane?
Jackass of the year. So
yeah, but Steve,
there were some votes for John Bennett, who definitely is one of the poster children for this.
He is
Novella.
Steve, he's your nemesis.
He wishes he could be my nemesis.
Exactly.
He's not up. He doesn't deserve to be my nemesis.
No, but he is like crazy enough.
Steve, you look out for those 34 viewers who watched his video on YouTube. All those 34 viewers, they're going
to
come.
Evan, it's up to 39.
I was actually surprised,
we sent
though.
Five people over there after they listened to us.
I was surprised to find out though that that he really is kind of putting on that whole insane thing on YouTube. That he's a lot more down to earth than the character he's created on YouTube to attack science and skeptics.
That's what's amazing, is that he thinks that that's. Yeah. That's doing a good job of conveying his message. Like the crazy sound effects and the video effects.
It's even worse, Jerry. It's even worse now.
He should wear a mask and a cape. I think that would add to it.
Yes, he should.
To his message.
I have a nominee for Jackass of the Year that I think you'll all have trouble fighting against this one. Andrew Wakefield.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got smacked down hardcore and is still somehow bouncing back up and attempting to stay relevant, despite the fact that his paper was pulled from
The Lancet.
The Lancet's And yeah, and
he was struck off.
Basically, you know, he was so completely, he was thoroughly debunked. I think we normally avoid the word debunk because it implies that you go into something with a certain,
a priori.
Yeah.
It's too bad because all the damage.
But he was thoroughly debunked.
Yeah, but it's true. It's unfortunate all the damage that he's provided over the years, though. Has done it. You know,
and you know, like how the Nobel Prize they'll give it to like two or three people who did research all in a related area. Mm. So if we're going to give it to Andrew Wakefield, we're going to give the same Jackass Award to the Age of Autism, who's just always there promoting, you know, for their attempted campaign to put anti-vaccine propaganda in movie theaters this year, and just they're always there, still fighting, by the way.
Let me just briefly say that Elise has continued to stay on top of that story, and she found that I think Maria, one of the other skeptics, saw one of the anti-vaccine PSAs being shown in a theater and alerted Elise, who contacted the theater. They found out that the syndicated advertising company that they use slipped that PSA in without informing the theater. The theater had it pulled immediately, but who knows how many other movie theaters are running it and they don't even realize it. So Elise is now following up with their clients attempting to make sure that these PSAs aren't running. So they're sneaky mofos.
Yeah,
and Jenny McCarthy and Meryl Dory.
Lump them into the anti-vaccine loons collectively. Yeah.
I guess, you know, if I had to vote for one person, I would say that worldwide it was Dory.
Meryl Dory.
Yeah.
She was a giant jackass. Yeah,
she's despicable.
All right, and the flip side, the skeptic of the year.
So the audience favorite was clear.
Simon Singh won hands down in terms of the vote. Because this was the year that he bested the British Chiropractic Association.
Yeah. Yep.
They dropped their lawsuit. He won the staring contest with them, basically.
Yep. And has gotten the legal system there to rethink their libel laws.
Yeah. So he was definitely a real skeptical hero this year. And
what an impact.
Definitely deserves a mention.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Congratulations, Simon. Rebecca, tell him what he'll win.
You know, absolutely nothing.
But it's something.
I think Richard Saunders leading up the Australian skeptics with the power balance win that we had this past month.
Well, yeah, I think I would expand it to the Australian skeptics.
Yeah, absolutely.
They had a great year.
They did.
And led the way on power balance. They led the way on a lot of anti-vaccine stuff. And they pulled off an awesome conference, TAM Australia, an awesome conference.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean, for activists and organizers, they kicked ass this year.
Yeah.
Great job.
Yeah. Yep.
Great job.
I don't know how they're going to top it. Kicked ass.
You know, talking about Simon Singh and being inspired by what he did this past year and following everything. I mean, I remember talking to Rebecca when this story broke and getting more accurate information from Rebecca, like who's basically there and knowing people involved and knowing Simon and everything. I mean, I had an emotional attachment to this story like no other thing that happened this year in the world of skepticism. And when the news came down that Simon actually won the lawsuit, like I was so thrilled beyond thrilled that it happened. I was really, really excited. And I thought, you know what? The activism is working.
Yeah, I mean, that's what and I think the same holds true for our mention of the Australian skeptics, is that it's really inspiring to see people stepping up and getting things done. And it reminds you that, you know, even you sitting at home listening to this podcast, no matter what you do, there's a good chance that you can help out in doing something. I would even throw in as an honorable mention, Elise Anders. I mentioned her earlier.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, I mean, she's basically like single-handedly. She's got obviously the skeptics behind her, but for the most part, she's the face of this fight against the Age of Autism anti-vaxxers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's not backing down. And she's just, you know, she's an amazing woman. But when it comes down to it, she's just a mother who was concerned about you know, her children getting vaccinated, and she saw this happening, and she decided she would do something about it.
Yeah, it's like Reese Morgan as well. I mean, there's a lot of individual skeptics who, and the skeptic bros for doing the placebo bans. I mean, there's lots of individual skeptics out there who just take one thing under their belt and make it their own. Because, you know, we can't do everything. Nobody.
It was a great year for grassroots skepticism.
Yeah,
no doubt about it.
It was
big year for it.
And guys, don't forget, and this is something I think that is very important for us to keep in mind as we move into 2011, is that a lot of the skeptics and the skeptical organizations globally are connecting with each other now, and they're helping each other.
Yeah, we're actually doing stuff. Imagine that. One more honorable mention. Someone voted on the forums for Phil Plait for Bad Universe, and I think that deserves a big mention because Phil really has managed to break skepticism into
mainstream
media. I mean, that's what we're all trying to do, and he did it. So congratulations to Phil
that
for
was
that
great.
As well.
Good job, Phil.
So we're going to do a skeptical in memoriam, just basically remembering those scientists and skeptics who we lost over 2010. Of course, we already mentioned Martin Gardner, who passed away earlier this year. Martin Gardner was, of course, one of the founders of the modern skeptical movement and was well known to, you know, of course, many of us for his column in Scientific America, for his many books. You know, Fads and Fallacies in the Name of Science remains a classic. So, you know, intellectually, he really was one of the people who really got the whole movement going.
Yeah, his was one of the first skeptical books I read. Fads and Fallacies turned me on to the skeptical movement. And I remember his books being sold in the Klutz catalog, because I was a big Klutz fan. That's how I learned to juggle and do magic and stuff. And they sold his puzzle books through there. And I was
a
fan of Martin Gardner before I even knew that he was a skeptic, or before I even knew what skepticism was.
Also, we were informed by one of the New Zealand skeptics that Dennis Dutton passed away. You know, he was a philosopher, intellectual, and the co-founder of the New Zealand Skeptics. Very interesting guy, actually, and I'd never heard of him before, I'm sad to say, but looks like he was pretty active. He still has an active website, DennisDutton.com.
And, of course, Dennis Dutton was very famous for his website, Arts and Letters Daily, which he founded in 1998. And got millions of page views a month, and it was one of the biggest skeptic websites out there for a long time.
Yeah, he was the author of the book The Art Instinct, Beauty, Pleasure, and Human Evolution. So I never read it, but it sounds interesting.
And of course, the thing we should really be thankful for Dennis Dutton for doing is that he believed that the internet could be used as more than just a place to you know, for porn and lolcats. He actively campaigned for the idea that there could be a free flow of intellectual discourse on the internet, and that's why he set up Arts and Letters Daily, and he was sort of committed to that ideal. And for that, I think we should all be grateful, because I think that we're sort of, I hope that this podcast and our blogs are a continuation of his ideas.
He invented the internet?
He did. Yeah. And Al Gore. Yeah.
Wow.
Together.
So what you're saying is he brought it to all our attention that there was enough room for intellectual stimulation and pornography, both.
Yeah.
On the internet.
Sometimes in the same place.
Yeah, two different kinds of stimulation. Right.
Just think about how that guy changed your life.
I think Dutton was probably a bit underappreciated amongst skeptics in the in America, at least in the UK. Probably a bit more appreciated in New Zealand. But also he was very famous and popular amongst just a literary elite, I suppose, for his website, which I think is great, because he was a skeptic who sort of branched out beyond what we would consider the normal skeptic audience.
Also, this was the year that Tsutomu Yamaguchi passed away. You guys know who he was?
Yeah, I heard about him.
Yeah, yeah.
So, amazing story. This guy was in Hiroshima when the atomic bomb was dropped on.
Oh, that's a bad place to be.
Oh,
that guy.
He survived.
You went to almost anywhere else in the world except there on that day.
Right. He survived, was taken to a hospital in Nagasaki.
Oh, he was safe for a few days there.
And then he got bombed there. Oh. He survived two atomic bombs.
How kick ass is that?
And then
human cockroach.
And you know, he's like he's the only guy alive that can hear the second bomb go off, and he can go again, again, not again.
It's like, oh no,
it's like a freaking movie.
He passed away this year at the age of 93.
From cancer?
One hearty mofo. Now, Jay, there's also Jay. This one's close to your heart, so I know you'd want to recognize that this was the year also that Bob Guccione died.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Founder of Penthouse Magazine.
Producer of Caligula.
How laid was that guy?
Like a shag rug in the 70s.
I know. Think about it.
Malcolm McDowell was in that movie.
Yeah, that's true.
He starred in it. Yeah.
So the title role.
And Helen Mirren. Jeez.
And a number of scientists died this year. We did talk about Benoit Mandelbrot, known as the father of fractals. We talked a lot about him.
We'll miss you, Benoit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We'll put up a monument called Fractal Rock.
That was awesome.
Do you guys know that the director of The Empire Strikes Back died?
Irwin Kershner.
Yeah.
What? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Nobody ever took so much junk and molded it into such wonderfulness than Irwin Kershner, I argue. Yep.
Also, Dino De Laurentiis.
Wow. Dune. And,
he did some other stuff, too. But
King Kong in the mid-70s. Yeah. Twin Towers.
Well, let's do some quick SGU stats before we move on to Who's That Noisy in Science or Fiction.
Stats.
So the SGU continues to grow. We are on the cusp.
We're on a cusp?
Of passing... Oh.
Virgo and
arbitrary numerological milestone of 20 million all-time downloads.
Whoa.
Wow.
20 million.
We will cross this sometime this month, meaning January. So right now, as of right now, we have 19,662,565 downloads.
So maybe the person listening to this right now is the one who made us pass...
The 20
that number,
millionth
number. You should have a prize.
That round number. Yeah, yeah.
We should.
Yeah, we should. $20 million to the 20 millionth listener.
Jay, that's impossible.
They have to prove it, that they're the 20
millionth. Yeah. If you can prove it, we will recognize you.
$20 million.
The average, like crazy. The average downloads per episode has increased to about 80,000.
Which is awesome because I remember when we were at 60,000, we were talking about how we all thought we had plateaued.
Oh, well, we continued to creep up.
Right, which I might point out is almost 235,200 in the octal numbering system, which is a lot.
The fuck are you talking about?
No, that's great.
Base 8, man. Base 10. What's so special about base 10? Let's look at base 8. Let's look at hexadecimal.
We have 10 fingers, Bob. We have 10 fingers.
I know,
okay?
But that's base our 10. Bias. We got to transcend our biases.
It was perfect.
No,
timing,
Bob's
Bob.
Right. We should use hexadecimal and just report that we have H million a year.
How many nanos?
Yeah, once in a while we could do that.
Bob, the reason why we use 10 is when you get to the number 10, the zero comes up again.
Bob, oh boy.
Your timing's impeccable. You figured out we needed to geek it up about 12 levels right there. And you did a perfect
another
job
idea
coming
for
through.
For a whole podcast episode. It's called Jay Explains Base
10.
I know how the first episode will go. Okay, hold up both hands in front of your face. Wiggle your fingers.
So we have 80 killer listeners.
80 killer listeners. We do. We have more listeners. That's how many unique downloads you get per episode per week. Total downloads is about 550,000 a month. So you figure, what's that, 140,000 a week? That's
wow.
pretty. That's a pretty big good. Audience.
Which is 14 killy listeners.
Well done. Good callback.
Now, actually, we do have access recently to our stats by country. It's no surprise that the United States is where most of our listeners are. 53.6% of the downloads are from the U.S., 12.5% from the U.K., Australia's in third with 8.2%, and Canada is right at their heels with 8.1%.
Mike, can you do something about that?
I'll start listening again, so I'll bring it up to 8.2.
Canada and Australia are in a dead heat. I think they need a competition.
Why the disparity, though? That's a little bit surprising that there's such a huge disparity. Is it just as more podcast listeners within the United States?
Well, I don't think there's more population.
More skeptics.
I think per capita, Australia is winning. But you know,
yeah, no one lives in Australia, so well, it's mostly just sheep, and they don't own iPods.
Anytime our stats go up, I am completely happy to know it, and I'm completely shocked to know it
that people continue to listen to this.
What do you think is the fifth most populous country in terms of SGU?
Rwanda,
fans?
Hawaii,
the Vatican.
That's where Obama was supposedly born.
Kyrgyzstan.
After Ireland,
after Canada is Sweden, then New Zealand.
Yeah, wow,
Sweden.
Norway. It's all those
Germany and
too.
Norway, right?
Yeah.
Now I looked up the least number of downloads.
Yeah. Oh God.
It's actually a 4-way tie for last between Rwanda, American Samoa, Benin, which I've never heard of. Sorry, that one guy who's listening in
it's
Benin,
next,
sorry.
It's next to Jerry's. Aww.
And Samoa, all tied with one download each.
That's awesome.
Benin's in West Africa.
Nice one, Evan.
No, thank you.
FYI.
Thanks, Jay. Samoa gets the internet?
One download. We had over 200 countries in which we've been downloaded.
Wow.
That's pretty
there
cool.
There are 200 countries?
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
That is
cool.
Amazing.
Yeah, you know, not surprisingly, mostly English-speaking countries, but you know.
If anybody wants to translate this podcast into other languages.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah. I bet a couple people could do it in Klingon, though.
Bienvenue au Skeptics Guide de l'Univers.
Mike, I'm glad you brought that up because the official language of Benin is French.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So there's one guy out there that just said, yes!
Yes!
I mean, oui!
Oui!
Uh-huh.
Oui!
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, on to some new content. We're going to actually do a Who's That Noisy this week, Evan.
Oh, that's right. We are doing a Who's That Noisy this week.
Well, you have to say who won last week first.
Yeah, absolutely, Rebecca. You're very good.
I know how Who's That Noisy works.
You've been part of this podcast now for the better part of 5 years.
Don't you tell me how
years.
Who's That Noisy works. It's
250 episodes later.
A sentence doesn't make sense outside of this podcast.
Go ahead, Evan.
All right. Last week's Who's That Noisy was as follows.
And so what's kept you interested in skeptics? How come you didn't just kind of get involved in it and then think, yeah, I've done that now? Well, how come you're still sort of active and involved?
Yeah.
Rebecca Watson.
That is.
A lot of people. a lot of guesses for Rebecca Watson.
Yeah. That's me with my new accent.
Someone actually found the YouTube clip of this.
Your pretentious Madonna-esque accent, that one?
Yes.
I got to hear you speak that way, Rebecca. Come on. Give me a little.
Accent. Oi, Governor, nice day, isn't it? Clean your chimneys.
It's like listening into a mirror.
Caught blimey.
It's like listening to the BBC, right? Today in the news.
Today in sports, in football, that's soccer.
No, I'm the other person. I'm the other person in that interview. Aren't
yes,
I?
You are.
Yes,
you are.
But who is the interviewer?
Danny Darling.
That is Danny. Yeah.
Danny Darko.
From UK Skeptic
Danny Darling.
Magazine. Danny Darling.
Danny Darling.
Yeah, we were at Skeptics in the Pub.
Is she as sexy as she
in
sounds?
In a bathroom.
Yeah.
She is. She's mega sexy.
Yeah.
Mega.
So we're going to Tam London.
She sounded giga sexy.
Yeah, you should.
And Danny will be there.
She's very cool. I like Danny. I was also on. I was on Danny's podcast. I think it's called Two Cons. CONTS.
All right. That podcast now has a new listener.
Holy crap!
Oh my god.
Yep. I'm not the other cunt.
I can't. I cannot think. I can't say anything that hit my brain right then. When Rebecca said that. So to keep my.
I don't get it. CONTS.
Because she and her co-host are on two different continents.
Oh, I got it.
And they have cleverly abbreviated the word continent.
Short for continent, now I get it.
I say.
Is that a common abbreviation in the UK?
No.
No.
No. No. Normally they just go with twat.
All right. Did anyone win that, Evan?
Rueful Rabbit. And Rueful's won before, so.
The Wascally Rabbit. Yeah.
Good job.
Wascally Rabbit. Rueful very Rabbit. Nice job. Well done.
What do you got for this week? Done.
All right. For this week. Here we go. Who's That Noisy?
Yeah.
It's someone that doesn't know how to use a microphone.
Now, there was some rustling happening in the leaves. That's not the noise we're looking for. We're looking for what made that other noise that is quite apparent in those clips. So
the fart sound.
These aren't the noises you're looking for.
It's not another dying animal, is it, Evan?
No, I promise you it's nothing that offends anyone's hypersenses. So give it your best guess. Good luck, everyone.
It's time for Science or Fiction.
Each week, I come up with three science news items or facts, two genuine and one fake. And then I challenge my panel of skeptics to tell me which one is the fake. But first, a couple of things. First, we're going to do a quick correction from last week. Interestingly, so I was reading the news item about that there's only been two lunar eclipses on the winter solstice in the last 2,000 years, right?
Yeah.
Yes, but yes, I got that wrong.
Had
yes,
a total brain fart. I said full moon instead of lunar eclipse.
That's funny. So I wasn't wrong.
And nobody picked up on it. You guys all knew what I was talking about, and nobody realized that I didn't actually say lunar eclipse. I said full moon.
That's so funny.
So it was obviously there's only two lunar eclipses, full lunar eclipse on the winter solstice in the last 2,000 years, not full moon, which happens much more frequently.
Is that a form of intentional blindness?
Inattentional blindness? I guess so. I guess so. I mean, you know, I knew what I meant. You guys all knew what I meant, but nobody picked up on the fact that that's not what was actually said.
I mean, we heard it and read it, over and over.
I know.
What the hell, man?
That is very weird.
It's weird, isn't it? I didn't believe it when I got the first email. I'm like, no, you misheard. I went back like, holy crap, how did I miss that?
That is so funny.
And before we do this week's science or fiction, Mike is going to give us an update on the science or fiction statistics.
Yes, I have the statistics here compiled for 2010 for science or fiction. The person who had the best science or fiction score this year was Rebecca with 77.5% correct.
Awesome, Rebecca. Bravo. Brava.
Brava. Yeah.
Bravi.
followed by Bob, which is 74.5%.
Wow, that's a good percent.
Good job, Bob.
Thank you.
After that is Jay, 59.6%.
Wow.
Yeah. Last year you were at 50%, Jay. So you
good job, increased. Jay.
Thank you.
And then it's Evan with 58%.
Oh, I predicted 52%, so it was actually higher than my prediction.
So in the end, it's Steve with 50%. And the amount of games everybody won was 13. And the amount that of games that nobody won was 3. Mm-hmm. Although one of those was one hosted by Bob.
Yes.
Right.
I remember that fondly.
All right.
Keep that one loaded in your iPad all night. Listen to it as you sleep. Got them all.
So for this week, there is a theme, but I'm not going to tell you what the theme is. And we'll see if you can figure it out. Which you probably will. All right. Here are the three items for this week. Number one. Researchers find that non-coding sequences of DNA may be responsible for more variation among individuals than genes. Item number two, an extensive genetic analysis indicates that modern dogs first evolved in the Middle East, not Asia, as was previously thought. And item number three, geologists have determined that the Earth was not completely frozen for most of its early history, despite lower levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, because of relatively increased output from the sun. Mike, as our guest this week, you get to go first.
Can't we let Bob go first?
No.
Nope.
Oh, come on. All right.
Actually, you'd want Rebecca to go first based on those stats.
That's true.
That's true.
I'm the new queen of science fiction.
Yeah, you're the queen of geek.
Bob, you are no longer the queen.
Was I ever?
Well, that one time that you put on that hose.
Oh, yeah, right.
Go on, Mike.
Hey, all right, so yeah. I haven't read any of these, or I haven't been reading any science news for a while, so this is all new to me.
You read.
I'm going to go ahead and say number one is fiction, and I have no explanation for that.
You're the one with DNA and
genes?
With chromosomes? Okay. All right, Queen Rebecca?
Oh, no, make Bob go first.
It's good. It's good to be the queen.
Man, it's so difficult being on top.
Yeah, well.
Don't.
Oh. Okay. Oh. Too easy, don't. Too easy.
You gotta work out your thighs, Rebecca.
Set that one down. What did I just say, Jay? I said don't. I haven't read anything about any of these. So I'm actually in the same position as Mike in the dumb boat.
Aye, Captain.
So non-coding sequences of DNA may be responsible for more variation among individuals than genes. Non-coding sequences of DNA. Okay, so is that junk DNA, though? Can you answer that, Steve? No.
They're not necessarily the same thing.
No, okay. Yeah, see, I'm dumb. I don't know anything about that. So that's plausible to me, because I have no idea what it is. An extensive genetic analysis indicates that modern dogs first evolved in the Middle East, not Asia, as was previously thought. Well, I did know that, or I was under the impression that dogs supposedly evolved in Asia, but it doesn't really blow my mind that it would actually be in the Middle East. It's not really that big of a jump to me, astronomically speaking. Geologists have determined that the Earth was not completely frozen for most of its early history, despite lower levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere because of relatively increased output from the sun. You know what's weird? What's weird to me is that thinking about these, they actually all sound familiar, like we've talked about them in the past. And my suspicion is that Steve has actually taken previous science or fiction items and tweaked them to see if we can find the correct one amongst things that we've actually heard before. That's my suspicion.
That's correct. The theme is these are all science or fiction items from 2010.
Aha! I win! Well,
from this year, Steve?
Yeah, from this year.
And I just listened to all of them today.
Can we just...
What the hell?
Can we just leave it at that? Like, give me a point for that?
Then, yeah, sure, you get a point.
Don't work that way, Queenie.
Here's your crown, your majesty.
You know, Queenie? The first time I heard all these then, presumably it was at least 2 o'clock in the morning, my time. And therefore, I have zero memory of any of these, except for this, like, this faint sort of reminiscence of them.
It was funny to listen to you reason through them the same way you reasoned through them the first time. And yet you exhibit no memory of having done it before. It's interesting.
Except for I do. There is a memory.
There's a glimmer.
A faint whisper.
A glimmer.
There's a whisper of a memory that allowed me to grasp what was happening. See, and that's just it. That's my talent, Steve. It's not knowing what non-coding sequences of DNA are. It's being able to sniff out when I'm being conned. That's right.
So what's your answer,
I can
then?
Totally tell
that's
them.
Called street smarts.
No. Number three. Increased output from the sun. I'm going to say that's fiction. Why? I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
Bob?
Wow. This really sucks. This is tough. And I looked at a lot of these today, and these aren't ringing any bells. This is tough. The first one makes absolutely no sense at all. More variation from non-coding sequences. There's got to be something subtle there that I'm missing because that's just way too it's too damn obvious. And I'm sure I probably said that 7 months ago when I saw this. Let's see. Modern dogs. Yeah, to me, that's all right. I mean, I would think by now we would have a really good handle on pretty much where they modern dogs evolved from. But, you know, who knows how, you know, maybe the new genetic analysis was really thorough, much more thorough than previously. Okay, I can kind of see that. And the third one also doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, the words here that concern me are not completely frozen for most of its early history. I mean, well, what do you mean? Most of its early history. That could come back to bite me on this one. But I don't really see this one being true either because I think it's pretty well nailed down that we, you know, had Earth was frozen for huge swaths of time in our past. And I don't remember hearing anything about the sun having more output in the past that could account for that. So I mean, maybe I should pick two because one and two just seem way out there for me, especially one. So maybe that means I should pick two because that seems the most plausible. So maybe that's the one that's fiction. Crap.
There it is. First crack of 2011.
It's not the 2011.
It is when people are listening to this.
Okay. Don't get technical with me.
More variation from non-coding sequences. Jay, how could that be? I don't believe it.
I know, right?
Therefore, I'm going to do the dog one because it's just the least likely to be fiction.
Right,
I'm gonna
at least
go with
now
that.
We've covered all our bases.
We have. No sweep for me this week. All right, Jay.
A few comments. One, I just remembered what I think my all-time favorite bit that we ever did on the show was when Bob took a really long time to do science or fiction, and Steve played.
I did the intermission music from Monty Python on the Holy Grail.
Holy Grail.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Great music. Classic. Great music.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And being that I'm going last.
No.
What?
No.
Evan is last. Evan is last.
Hello, I'm on the show.
Evan is the Zeppo of.
It's a good thing that
SGU.
I deliberately put that pause in there to check.
I don't know about Zeppo.
I know Zeppo? Mike threw you off because you know Zeppo. Mike is. Evan,
oh, that's
Evan
right. Okay, the rhythm. It was the rhythm.
Forgotten Marx brother.
I definitely think that the one about the dogs, modern dogs evolving in the Middle East, I definitely believe that one is correct. Now I'll also go to the first one.
It's good to have faith, isn't it, Jay?
It is. Faith feels good.
Believe.
Researchers find that non-coding sequences of DNA may be responsible for more variation. I also believe that that one is correct.
And therefore...
So I believe that the frozen for most of its early history hoo-ha is BS.
Okay. And who do we leave out? Who's left?
I don't know.
Evan!
Hi, everyone. Let's take these one by one, shall we?
Better than two at a time, yeah.
I happen to remember all three of these. Thank you.
Oh.
And I'm going to choose to get this incorrect.
So... This is an interesting strategy.
Well, that's a good gambit.
Some things
there.
Never change.
The dogs in the Mideast, not Asia. That one is the fiction.
Okay.
Oh, Evan, all right.
What?
Now that you've answered, you're wrong. You and Bob are wrong.
So wrong.
All right.
I told you I was going to be wrong.
Let's
that
take these in
right.
order. Item number one, researchers find that non-coding sequences of DNA may be responsible for more variation among individuals than genes. Everyone thinks this one is true except for Mike, who thinks this one is the fiction.
I think it's a fiction.
And this one is science.
This sorry, one, Mike.
How can I forget this?
This one
what
is
the hell
still
is it?
Science. Yep. so, yeah, the non-coding regions are not junk DNA. They're regulatory segments of DNA.
Oh, they're not coding for proteins, but they're determining which genes turn on and off?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right.
Now Bob remembers.
Which, oh, yes, of course. Makes perfect sense, right?
Perfect sense.
So anyway, yeah, so that could explain, obviously, a lot of variation. You know, regulating, not necessarily all the way on or all the way off, too. There's everything in between. So, you know, basically how expressive
half on, half off.
Are the genes. Yeah, you know, they could be more or less active. So those
less of a switch,
those
it's more of
surrounding
a dial.
Yeah, it's like a dimmer dial, exactly. So those surrounding areas of DNA that regulate the expression of genes are actually responsible for more variation.
Oh, genes! I thought you meant genes.
Than the actual protein coding sections of genes themselves.
Hey, Mike. All right. You'll slay us all.
Sorry, Mike. Let's go on number two. An extensive genetic analysis indicates that modern dogs first evolved in the Middle East, not Asia, as was previously thought. Evan thinks this one is... And Evan and Bob think this one is the fiction, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And this one is science.
Oh. Yes!
Because they have dog pictures on the pyramids.
Let's hear it for the tiny mouse brain. High five, Jay.
Oh!
Now... I will confess that this one was the fiction when I originally used it. That's right.
Yeah.
I had tweaked this one to make it fiction when I originally used it. I think they said that the dogs originated in the Americas.
Yes.
To make it wrong, but this time I turned it back to correct.
That's right, Steve.
Evidence showed that they originated in the Middle East.
Oh yeah.
And I did the same thing with the third one. Which was correct. Yeah. Originally, and I made it into the fiction. Geologists,
and there you go. And that's how he does it, guys.
That the Earth was not completely frozen for most of its early history, despite lower levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere because of relatively increased output from the sun. That one is the fiction.
So the theme this week was science or fiction questions from the past that you decided to screw around.
Yes, exactly. So when I originally used this one, I put in the correct way, which is that geologists have determined that the Earth was not frozen for most of its early history
who cares? I won.
the sun had decreased output.
Who cares?
That's true. Right? So the sun had decreased output, not increased output earlier on. Yeah. The sun's getting hotter, not cooler.
Right.
So the question is, why wasn't the Earth a snowball, 4 billion years ago, if the output from the sun was less than it is today? And the answer is that there were also fewer clouds to reflect the sunlight back. So the Earth was absorbing a relatively larger percentage of the light that was falling on its surface, despite the fact that that solar output was a little decreased relatively.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
So who won?
I just reversed those.
Shut up.
So I believe Jay and Rebecca won this week.
I believe
And there
did.
You go.
Jay and Rebecca are 100% for 2011.
That's one.
Jay,
yeah,
Jay,
just a little. Yes,
you're at 100% for 2011. Good for you.
That's right. Thank you. I'm killing Bob so far. Shut out here, Bob.
That's right.
Jay, relax. Remember what happened last year? Remember what happened last year when you got a little too big for your britches?
And I received my punishment and executed it flawlessly with Rebecca.
It was all right.
Yeah, I let you off easy. So, Jay.
So.
Yes.
What's your quote this week?
So this week we're playing Who's That Quotey?
Okay.
Okay. I like that.
All right.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the first person to guess who it is. Shout it out at any point during the quote. Okay.
Carl Sagan.
Questioning our own motives,
Gallagher,
and our own process is critical to a skeptical and scientific outlook. We must realize that the default mode of human psychology is to grab onto comforting beliefs for purely emotional reasons.
Yakov
Spock.
Smirnoff.
Spock.
And then justify those beliefs to ourselves with post hoc rationalizations. It takes effort to rise above this tendency, to step back from our beliefs and our emotional connection to conclusions and focus on the process. The process, i.e. science, logic, and intellectual rigor, has to be more important than the belief.
I think I read that on a bumper sticker once.
That sounds really familiar.
So I mean, it was a big car.
Socrates. Rebecca, final guess?
I'm sticking with Yakov Smirnoff.
Well, I have the distinct pleasure of quoting my own brother, Dr. Stephen Novella.
Oh, and to think that Dr. Stephen Novella didn't know it.
I did. Yeah, right. That's why I'm sitting there silent. I knew that was my own words.
Uh-huh, sure.
You knew that was yours?
So, or should I say, Dr. Stephen Novella? As corny as it is, I was looking for quotes, and I typed in Steve's name. I was like, you know what? I'm going to see if there are any quotes from Steve on the web. I found this quote, and I realized, like, when does someone in general get to quote one of their family members like this? So I had to do it.
When do you get a chance?
Yeah.
Every week. Right. Steve, they used one of your quotes on a bookmark or something.
It was
Australia.
A shorter version of that quote.
Yeah.
I like the shorter version better.
Shorter version was a little more pithy, yeah.
A little pithy.
Here's another one. And beware the casual assumption of moral superiority or that everyone who disagrees with you is evil. That is the path to fanaticism. Dr. Stephen Novella.
Oh.
It's a love fest. So, guys, the year's over. I had the pleasure of recording, how many episodes did we do? Exactly 52 this year, Steve?
Yes. 52 weeks
and
in a year. Yeah.
The pleasure of sharing all this time with you guys again. I really appreciate working with all of you, and I look forward to the years to come, and hopefully things will keep moving forward for us, and thank you all.
Thank you, Jay.
Well said,
thank you guys, Jay, for joining me the whole year. It really was for the SGU, it was a great year. But I know next week is our prediction show, but I'm going to make one prediction this week, that 2011 is going to be even bigger.
Oh, yeah.
We have some things cooking, which we can't really talk about. But
like a macaroni. Cake in the oven, baby.
But,
sorry. Don't want to get you too excited.
Maybe some exciting things happening in 2011 for the SGU.
Evan is pregnant.
I didn't touch
I would
him.
Be a billionaire.
You would be.
All right. But, Steve, we can't forget to thank the listeners of our show, the supporters of our show, the people that post on our forums. I mean, we're here today after all these years because of the people that listen to the show and the awesome feedback we get and all the awesome emails that we get and everyone that turns out to see us do the live events. I mean, that is exactly why we're here.
Yeah. I mean, we are part of a community, an awesome community. I mean, I've met so many incredible people through this podcast and through the Skeptical Movement and the amazing meetings and all of our live events that it really – that's what keeps us going. It really is. So we every year, we have to say it. Thanks to all of our listeners, to everyone who helps the show, to every guest that we had this year, to all the people that make this possible.
I concur.
Absolutely, without a doubt. Thank
Plus
you all.
One. What he said.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ditto.
Thanks, everybody.
Mega dittos.
And thanks. Thank you guys again.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, everyone here.
Thanks, Steve.
It is a great pleasure to work with all of you.
And
ditto.
Until next week and next year, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by the New England Skeptical Society in association with the James Randi Educational Foundation and SkeptChick.org. For more information on this and other episodes, please visit our website at www.theskepticsguide.org. For questions, suggestions, and other feedback, please use the Contact Us form on the website or send an email to info@theskepticsguide.org. If you enjoyed this episode, then please help us spread the word by voting for us on Dig or leaving us a review on iTunes. You can find links to these sites and others through our homepage. Theorem is produced by Kinetto and is used with permission.